You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrer.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up today after 7, join NPR for a recap of the Senate judiciary proceedings. Special coverage will be hosted by Ari Shapiro with analysis from NPR legal correspondent Nina Totenberg. That's tonight after 7 on the Ideas Network.
First, our next guest says the baby boomer generation, those born between 1940 and 1964, are to blame for most of America's problems. In his book, he argues that boomers are relentlessly devoted to their own enrichment at the expense of their country and children. He cites the American Psychiatric Association's definition of sociopathy to describe the baby boomer generation.
Bruce Cannon Gibney joins us now. He's a venture capitalist and the author of the book, A Generation of Sociopaths, How Boomers Betrayed America. Bruce, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you say that there's a clear culprit when it comes to just about all of the ills of our time. Debt, income inequality, climate change, cost of higher education, financial scandals. That's just a few of them. You also say the culprit is baby boomers. How can you blame a single generation for all that?
Well, I don't blame them for everything. Some starting conditions were challenging. You know, the environment had been a problem in the United States for some time, for example. But prior Congresses, before the baby boomers assumed political power, did begin to address that with the Clean Air Act of 1963 that was passed before any boomer could really vote. And the establishment of the EPA under Nixon. What happened is that problems ceased to be addressed in a serious way during the period of boomer tenure. And because the boomers were such a large cohort and they were fairly unified in their political views, at least as to economic matters that impacted them, they were able to push policy away from responses and proactive policies and towards policies of consumption and recklessness. So, with respect to their political power, everyone understands that the boomers are an unusually large generation. They were 52% of the voting eligible population in 1982, and that's come down over time. But as they've gotten older and their voting rates have risen and their political donations have increased and they've become the governing class themselves, their influence has waxed so that they controlled both the White House and the House of Representatives by between 1992 and 1995. Five is when that period of consolidation happened and continued to control both to these to today, 69% of the House and obviously the White House again and large chunks of the administrative state. So it's fair to look at how the country has done in the period in which the boomers have exercised significant control. And my argument is not that America is not great, because it is. My argument is that we fail to live up to our potential because of the short-sighted policies enacted by the boomers. I'm happy to talk about any of them.
Brendan, you say the country is underperforming, that, for instance, family incomes should be higher than they are today. We can lay this at the feet of the boomers. Can you talk about some of the economic impact that you see?
Sure. So let's start with income, which is correctly a concern for a great many Americans. So average wages have not experienced sustained and significant growth since the 1970s, median wages, pardon me. The past 16 years have been something close to a lost period for income growth. We're roughly where we were in 2000 for average earning families of standard composition. But what's notable is what an impact this has had on the young, so that relative to boomer age, 25 to 35-year-olds, 34-year-olds, younger people today are making about 20% less early in their careers, and their net worth is about 50% less, while the boomers have done much better. And the reason for that is that the boomers began to divest from the foundations of prosperity, so that you know, public higher education, for example, which is free for the boomers, has been systematically defunded, so that you know, the University of California, which formerly charged $0 in tuition, about $232 in non-inflation adjusted terms in the 1960s, about $2,000 today, now charges $13,500. Infrastructure, you know, it's increasingly difficult to get to work. People spend almost 50 hours a year on average in traffic, has been neglected, so that net infrastructure investment over the past decade has dropped down to as low as 0% net and has rebounded to a pretty uninspiring 0.5% of GDP on a net basis. And the debt, which eventually acts as a brake on economic growth has grown from when I was born in the 1970s, it was 34% of GDP, and now it's 105% and set to grow at north of 2.5% annually for the foreseeable future. And so all the money that goes to service the debt that was accumulated in the boomer years can't be diverted to dealing with infrastructure, can't be diverted to dealing with climate, can't be diverted to dealing with public higher education, and can't be devoted to research and development, which has really fallen off even from the levels in 1986 to 0.7% of GDP today. So if you don't invest in the productive plant of the country, you can't expect the country to grow particularly rapidly. And that's exactly what we've seen over the period of peak boomer power.
So if we agree with your assessment of some of these issues, why aren't we calling them a failure of politics and policy instead of a failure of a generation, the boomer generation?
Well, it's certainly a failure of policy. I think it would be very difficult to agree that to contest the idea that the past 16 years have been some run of unmitigated success for the United States. But people had to vote for the politicians who emplaced those policies. And even though many of those policies were known at the time to have deleterious effects on society, they were pursued anyway. And the most important voting bloc were the boomers. And judging by their expressed political preferences, they did in fact favor these policies of divestment and the channeling of the resulting monies into programs that benefited them, but that cannot be sustained over the long run. And of particular note in that category are old age benefits. Now, I'm for old age benefits. But in order for them to work, we have to have a stable way for funding them. And Social Security, by its own admission, will be partially insolvent in 2034, and that will reduce payouts on the order of 16 and 27% over time for people who start collecting after the 2030s. And that's the very youngest boomers and millennials and Gen X. So, you know, collecting a social resource at the expense of your children does not strike me as the most pro-social set of policies possible. But the boomers are relentlessly for maintaining the system as is, even though it's well known to be unsustainable without modification past the 2030s. The same goes for Medicare. The same goes for the environment. The same goes for public universities. At some point, you know, There's some amount of empathy is required for other people in society, and the other people in society now, the bulk of them are now young. The boomers, however, still control politics, and that's what I think allows us to trace responsibility back to the boomer generation.
We're talking with Bruce Cannon Gibney right now. He's the author of the new book, A Generation of Sociopaths, How the Baby Boomers Betrayed America. Let's talk a little bit about that word sociopath. Are you using it as a clear diagnostic word here? How do you intend that word to be taken?
I go through the DSM's factors, the psychological definition in the book. But I think for our purposes, we can understand it. So the modern name for sociopathic disorders, antisocial personality disorder. So the question I pose in the book, and I think the central question about our political class today is, can you have such a thing as an antisocial society? And I don't think that you can, but those are the policies that we pursued. And an antisocial society, in my view, under the boomer tenure has been the allocation of resources for everyone's enrichment to the short-term benefit of the boomers. And I do think that is antisocial.
And looking a little bit at what you see as sort of the origin story of how the boomers came to be antisocial, as you say they were conditioned, that this wasn't something that was predestined. But what is your theory on the forces that shaped the boomers?
Well, the boomers were raised in a historically odd manner. They were the first generation in modern America to be raised at a time where prosperity was assumed to be sort of more or less effortless, where per capita income would grow 2.5-3% annually without much effort, or it might have seemed like that at the time. They were the first generation to be raised with television. RCA introduced the first mass market set in 1946, just after the war. And television has the literature shows it has unambiguously negative effects on personality and cognitive development. They were the first generation to be raised permissively. Also in 1946, Benjamin Spock's book comes out, and that's a sea change from the sort of behaviorist, authoritarian parenting that had prevailed before, and different than, I think, the helicopter and tiger parenting that's coming up now. Now, what effects those new parenting techniques will have remains to be seen. We don't have the data on that yet, but we do have the data on permissive parenting. And then finally, you know, there were a number of, you know, environmental oddities that affected the boomers. It was the only generation to be majoritarian, bottle-fed in their early months. And that flipped around almost entirely in the 1970s after the Surgeon General released his report. And bottle feeding has been shown to have significant positive effects on cognitive and behavioral development. So there were a number of odd factors that shaped the boomers, and they haven't been fully repeated. So even with television, you know, there are significant parental reservations about screen time now that didn't exist in the 1950s. And all of these things were, I think, in general, unhelpful, with the exception of a fast-growing economy. You know, that's something I think we should be willing to risk, but presently we don't have to worry about that.
A lot to dig into there, but we want to get our callers in on this, too, as we talk with Bruce Cannon Gibney, the author of A Generation of Sociopaths, How Boomers Betrayed America. He's explaining why he says baby boomers are to blame for many of America's ills.
And you can join in now at 800-642-1234. What do you think about our guest's argument? If you're a baby boomer, do you think your generation is at fault for much of the state of the nation, negative or positive, if you want to make the case? Do you think baby boomers are the reason the 2016 presidential election was divisive? If you're not a baby boomer yourself, what do you think? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll pick up our conversation and get to your calls in just a bit here on Central Time.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. And we're picking up our discussion now about Bruce Cannon Gibney's new book. It's called A Generation of Sociopaths, How Boomers Betrayed America.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of this idea that baby boomers are a generation of sociopaths, antisocial behavior that baby boomers, especially as reflected in boomer politicians, made a lot of decisions that put future generations at risk? You buy it? Do you not? Call in at 800-642-1234. You can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And Bruce, I just want to ask you briefly, I want to get to our callers, but take us up to speed, if you would, to the 2016 presidential election. How do you see that as sort of a continuation of boomer politics?
So 2016 was obviously some sort of break for the American political system, but in order for that break to happen, There had to be some unusual preconditions, because in sort of no normal time would one, you know, for a high functioning economy living up to its potential, would one expect a Manhattan developer with some serious personal defects, at least alleged defects, be considered a credible candidate, much less be elected president. So I think the level of popular rage about the economy and about policy was a product of boomer choices that were made as early as the early 1990s. So, and again, these were somewhat politically heterodox. I think this is where the explanation has some explanatory power. You know, it was Clinton, the Democrat, the progressive Democrat, in theory, who you know, signed the NAFTA trade deal. It was negotiated by the first Bush. It was Clinton who pursued deregulation of the financial services industry, even though that was immediately on the heels of the failure of the LTCM hedge fund. The first thing they did after that was deregulate derivatives, which was an odd response. Glass-Steagall was obviously eliminated. The Bush two decades, I think, require not a whole bunch of commentary, but the entire foundation of American prosperity, which I think is a precondition for the functioning of American politics, had eroded, and the level of anger crept up, and we had a very unusual break. And as a result, Donald Trump is president. Now, of course, both candidates were boomers. They agreed on only one issue, which was that Social Security and Medicare would remain as is, even though both of them knew, or at least one of them knew, Hillary Clinton knew, that the Social Security faced partial insolvency in 2034 and Medicare also was in long-term trouble. Neither program is in near-term trouble, just to be clear. And I think that made clear who they were catering to. Now, young people obviously didn't vote as vigorously as they might have. That's just a general trend in democracies. Young people's voting participation rates are lower. But I don't think that we can entirely blame them because the choice was leftover number one and leftover number two, and they weren't particularly excited about either.
I'm going to jump in to make sure we get to our callers now. Let's go to Marie in Madison. Hi, Marie.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking the call.
Sure.
Yes, I would have to agree with a portion of this. I do feel young people, future retirees after the boomer years, are being mistreated in policies that this current government is setting out and passed as well, no doubt. However, I think it is really important to identify, which he just started doing, identify the policies and politicians who have actually, in my mind, done unethical and immoral things in forming policy that will affect future generations. Our country was established on certain fundamental things and continued with worthy politicians setting up programs that became the light to the world and hope to the world. And we should not be giving those up for our young people whatsoever. The retirement ages, everything, to me, is discriminatory toward future generations. By that, I do not mean that all boomers have neglected their duties toward their children. I don't think that in any way, shape, or form, or their grandchildren. But I do think specific people get in a rut as they pursue stock market and Wall Street goals and neglect the moral family goals that were a hope to the world.
Marie, thank you for that call. And Bruce, what do you say to that?
Well, I agree with the caller, Marie, that not all boomers fall into this, but a plurality of them, at least in the voting booth, you know, once every 2 years, do seem to continually reelect the politicians who pursue these policies, and the politicians respond to that. And this, you know, someone has to vote for these policies, and the caller is correct that younger generations are being mistreated by current American policy. There's a reason why the OECD has ranked the United States dead last on intergenerational equity. There's a reason why spending on seniors outpaces spending on the young by a ratio of 5-1 in the United States. There's a reason why youth poverty is slightly more than twice the rate of senior poverty. And you know, my preference would be for no one to be poor, but in order for everyone to do well, we have to make social investments. And again, this gets back to the point, you know, you can either view society as a positive-sum game that's played out over the long term, or you can view it as a zero-sum game that's played out over the course of your lifetime. And I think, at least in the voting booth, the boomers have tended to favor, at least a plurality of them, have tended to favor the zero-sum short-term gain.
Marie, thank you so much for that call. And we go next to Jenny in Madison. Hi, Jenny.
Hi. I am going to say, first off, I don't like to be negative. And I'm going to say some things that are kind of generalizations. But in my experience, I am shocked and aghast at the lack of awareness that I see in baby boomers. And their lack of sort of, and it's a generalization, but, and I'm speaking specifically about white middle class and white upper class individuals, not vesting in roles as grandparents, being more vested in traveling and seeing the world, an overinflation of their sense of what they've contributed to the world, a lack of acknowledgement of the post-war economic bump that they had and opportunities that they had. And I've heard people talk about how they're moving out of certain areas because they don't want to pay taxes to support the public schools now that their children are done. I am just floored by this. And when you try and engage or talk about the issues, it's you get the sense of entitlement that they've worked hard, they deserve their retirement and all of these sorts of things. And it's not that I don't question that people have worked to have things, but the disproportionate amount of resources that that generation is taking up and how they're impacting the generations that come directly after them is, if I was part of it, I would be horrified. And I am.
Jenny, thank you so much for that call and the comment. And Bruce, that reminds me of a phrase in your book. You call them a plague of generational locusts. Jenny says, staggered by lack of self-awareness. Briefly, as we start to wrap up, how do you see it?
I think some version of what Jenny says has enormous truth. She correctly points out, and this is what I argue in the book, that it's mainly the white middle class boomers who are driving a lot of these policies. And I don't focus on the minority experience because the minority experience is so different. Their experience is just radically different. With respect to the sort of deserving of retirement, now, I would like to see everyone have a decent retirement. But, you know, in order for that to happen, there has to be some generational equity, some sharing among generations, starting with taxing, to be blunt, people like me, more heavily. But with respect to the claim that many people hear that you know, Mr. and Mrs. X deserves their Social Security because they're simply getting out what they put in. As a mathematical matter, that's not true. So on a same dollar basis, inflation adjusted basis, people get about $1.53 in total entitlements for each dollar in total entitlement taxes they pay.
And Bruce, I'm sorry we have to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That was Bruce Cannon Gibney, venture capitalist and the author of the new book, A Generation of Sociopaths, How Boomers Betrayed America. And you can keep that conversation going over on the Central Time Facebook page. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferrett. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.